There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave counsel. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Oh, wow. Busy Midday Mobile on the way. 12:07. Glad you're here. Hey, I'm Sean. Coming up next 2 hours, lots to do. And of course, a lot from you on the text line and the phone line. Don't forget about that old phone line, right? 343-0106. You can get through there. Of course, you can text us. You can use the app to text us or call us. You can also use that to leave us a message that we can play back on the air. And what? You haven't downloaded the app yet? Well, let's remedy that. Make sure to go to, if you're Android phone, go to Google Play. If you have an iPhone, go to the App Store and look for FMTALK1065. No point between the 6 and 5. Just put that in. The logo comes up. That's the app. Download that, baby. It's free, and it's like a digital multi-tool. Everything from streaming the station, wherever you go, and you got signal. Also, you can check show schedules there. You can check the latest traffic maps. You can also get instant weather updates on there. And peruse our 55 hours a week of podcasts. That's really popular. First place they post is through the app, so you can get them there. And you can also check out, the feature, like many other features, but like pushing the mic icon there and leaving us a message. So go to your app store, wherever you buy your apps, and it's not buying, wherever you get your apps, because it's free, completely free. And it's FM Talk 1065, no point between the 6 and 5. And download it today. Tell me what you think about it once you get it on there. All right. Speaking of text, too, a lot of them came in here. John said, I'll put John in here because John says what many other, John said Sullivan would have been a great Auburn man, poor life choices. Well, you know, you're not the only one that says that. I probably wouldn't be doing this for a living. I didn't know some of the gigs that you could train for at Auburn were jobs you could have, so I was kind of ignorant to that back then. But yes, there's part of me that says, you know, if I want to spend my time outside, I probably should have considered that back then, but I did not. And University of Alabama invited me to go there, and it was good, mostly good for me. It wasn't. Maybe one day we'll talk about the fact that I got called into the dean's office. I accomplished that even at a big university. I think twice I had to visit Dean Loy Singleton's office of the College of Communications at the University of Alabama. I know it's a surprise that I would have done anything on air to get called into a dean's office, but I did indeed. But they still let me graduate, which was a good deal. All right, coming up at 12:30, 12:35, Cameron Smith from AL.com is going to join us. Also, Casey Callaway with the City of Mobile. We'll talk about this litter program going on, and it's a conversation we kind of had about a couple months ago, but now they're kind of rolling out the different parts of how this is going to work. They've allocated money for this, and Chief Resilience Officer Casey Callaway is responsible for this, so we'll talk about that in the 1 o'clock hour. And as I lamented, kind of, through the corner of my mouth to Jeff, I had a great, great soliloquy about Whoopi Goldberg put together that I worked on for quite a while. It went away, but we'll just do it off the top of my head, because we're going to get to Ukraine in just a second. I want to get into that report that's out from the, also had worked through the report from the Washington Times about lockdowns having little or no impact on COVID-19 deaths, a Johns Hopkins study. You heard Dalton and Dan talking about this morning. I'll get to those, but just the Whoopi Goldberg thing for a second. So the big story is, right, it's been going on, that Whoopi Goldberg, you've probably seen the clip, heard the clip here, when she said the Holocaust was not about race. Right, I'm paraphrasing what she had to say. And then the story today is she's, you know, been suspended for a couple weeks here. ABC News President Kimberly Godwin said in a note to a staff yesterday evening, while Whoopi has apologized, I asked her to take time off to reflect and learn about the impact of her comments. And one of the things that I just, the last name Goldberg, right? So the and not her given name, but okay. So here's help me through this here. So Whoopi Goldberg, Whoopi is a stage name, and I think she said she got that because she was very gassy, and so she was akin to a Whoopi cushion. So TMI on that one. But here's a quote. Well, let me give you a little background. So Karen Elaine Johnson was born in Manhattan in New York, November 13, 1955. This is from Wikipedia. The daughter of Robert James Johnson Jr., a Baptist clergyman, and Emma Johnson, a nurse and teacher. Okay, so last name Johnson there. And her mom's maiden name was Harris. Then you go down here in a quote from Whoopi Goldberg about her name. And yes, I mean, Goldberg is traditionally a Jewish name, right? So it asked about her stage name. She claimed in 2011, my mother did not name me Whoopi, but Goldberg is my name. It's part of my family, part of my heritage, just like being black. And I just know I am Jewish. I practice nothing. I don't go to temple, but I do remember the holidays. She's like a very casual practitioner of Judaism. So she says, she stated that people would say, come on, are you Jewish? And I would always say, would you ask me that if I was white? I bet not. Huh? What? So how about this? So Henry Louis Gates, who did the research, you know, this guy's done all the big genetic finds and like you're related to so-and-so and all that. So he did a study. He found out that all Goldberg's traceable ancestors were African-American. She has no known German or Jewish ancestry, and that none of her ancestors were named Goldberg, even though she says she is. Okay. So on top of, could you say that that is, as we live in this world of, what is it called, cultural appropriation, right? That's one of the verboten things out there, cultural appropriation. So Whoopi Goldberg has culturally appropriated a traditionally Jewish surname, and then goes on in some kind of, I don't know how she thought that, I mean, if that's what she thinks, that's what she thinks, but I don't know how she thought that was something that the Holocaust was not racial. Yes, you can lump in all the other groups, and we can, and people that were lumped in as well, homosexuals by the Nazis, the Catholics to some degree by the Nazis, gypsies, right? You could those are all true. But the overwhelming craze of the Nazis was all the fault of the Jews. It's the Jews' fault. Everything that's, it's not, you know, that we screwed up in World War I and we're still paying for war. No, it's the Jews' fault. They did it all. So for Whoopi Goldberg, who is a grown person, who knows better, not like some kid or something like that, to say that, I think, was she should have gotten pushback. It's up to her employer if she has to take time off or get fired from the show. And then there's these stories out today from whatever the Daily Beast and others that Whoopi's co-workers are angry that she was suspended from the show. You know, Whoopi's co-workers on that show, which, to be honest with you, I've only seen in clips. I don't have time nor inclination to check out The View, but I've seen it in clips. They're mad at everybody who does anything out there who they think is conservative, right? But here you have somebody saying something to the effect of, the Holocaust, it wasn't about race, and they're on her side, and they're good with it. I just want to point that out that maybe there's a cultural, has anybody else talked about that Whoopi Goldberg could be guilty of cultural appropriation? Just wondering about that. All right, we'll do the Ukraine update here quickly. As a story from The Guardian says, we now have more troops going to Eastern Europe. You probably heard this. The story from The Guardian says Joe Biden will deploy more than 3,000 U.S. troops in Germany, Poland, and Romania as Russia continues to build up its forces around Ukraine. And after talks between Washington and Moscow failed to bring any breakthrough or easing of tensions. The U.S. is sending 1,700 troops from the 82nd Airborne Division to Poland, a headquarters unit of about 300 from the 18th Airborne Corps will move to Germany, and 1,000-strong army armored units being transferred from Germany to Romania. John Kirby, Pentagon spokesman, said this force is designed to deter aggression and enhance our defensive capabilities in the frontline allied states. Well, we're putting the troops in the area. We're saying we're not going to, and once again, I'm somebody who, at this point, with the information I have, I do not want our men and women in theater against the Russians. Now, at the same time, I'm not a Chamberlain. I don't want to let Russia just do whatever it wants. But Russia is not specifically threatening Poland, Romania, or Germany. Heck, they can't. They're not going to go after Germany. Germany's on their side. So how is that deterring Putin? If we said we're not putting our troops in there, in Ukraine, but we're going to put them other places. Pentagon spokesman said deployments were separate from the 8,500 troops in the U.S. that were put on heightened alert to be ready to deploy at short notice. I'll say that, and they're also in addition to troops that are maybe kind of there. Reason to note, yeah, I mean, some discussion. I'm not the only one that knows it, but I mean, there's SF, there's special forces that have maybe been in theater already out there, but not what this move that's being made right now. But where are we going with this? You're looking at, this is a nuclear power. This is Russia. And I know they're having, having hearings with the UN Security Council and all that stuff. I don't expect much out of that. Goes on to say the decision to deploy U.S. troops follows an exchange of documents between U.S., NATO, and Russia setting out their respective positions on the European security and a series of phone calls between the U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, and the Russian Foreign Minister, Sergei Lavrov. U.S. has suggested a number of areas for negotiation and possible confidence-building measures, but it's insisted there can be no compromise over Ukraine's right to join NATO. Now, wait a second. That is the proxy for the real question here, right? I mean, it's this idea of Ukraine and getting Article 5 protection. Said the alliance has also stated it's non-negotiable Russia's central demand for guarantees that NATO will not expand further eastward. So that's where we sit with this. But yes, more troops going to the region in general. At the same time, a de minimis effort from European NATO powers to put troops in the same kind of situation. So we'll watch this. I'm sure we'll get a presser this afternoon on it, too. I know there's a whole bunch of other stuff we want to talk about on today's show, but that is continues to be like a very top, very front burner in my mind. I think it should all of us as we look at the possible outcome of a situation like this. Serious as all get out is how I see it. All right. And we come back. We'll talk about this. This study. So the headline here, it's Washington Times reporting on a Johns Hopkins study, said lockdowns had little or no impact on COVID-19 deaths, according to a new study, or new study shows. Said lockdowns in the U.S. and Europe have had little or no impact in reducing deaths from COVID-19, according to a new analysis by researchers at Johns Hopkins University. Here you go. The takeaway. This is stuff that I had highlighted and notes made in my show preparation that didn't go through. It said the lockdowns during the early phase of the pandemic in 2020 reduced COVID-19 mortality by about 0.2%, said the broad review of the multiple scientific studies. We find no evidence that lockdowns, school closures, border closures, and limited gatherings have had a noticeable effect on COVID-19 mortality, according to the research. But the research paper said lockdowns did have a devastating effect on the economy and contributed to numerous social ills. What's interesting about research, and not to take away from Johns Hopkins, because they're good at it, but this is just adding bold ink here to what so many non-scientists or no social scientists have been saying for a long time, right? That we all saw this. They went on to say, they have contributed to reducing economic activity, raising unemployment, reducing schooling, causing political unrest, contributing to domestic violence, and undermining liberal democracy. So the lockdowns had very little to do with reducing deaths out there. We'll talk more about these numbers. Also, take your calls when we get back at 343-0106. It's Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. By the way, Moon Pie Minute up in just a minute right after the news.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, coming to the phones in just a second. I know we've got plenty of text in here as well, but I do want to talk about some breaking news. It's up on our Facebook page. Thank you, Leanna, for the heads up. Also, put it out on the Twitter feed at FM Talk 106.5. Story from MyNBC 15 WPMI. According to police, multiple people shot at Mobile Motel. Public safety director tells NBC 15 that someone shot at a nearby Days Inn Motel. Drove to American Family Care. Law enforcement were dispatched to American Family Care at 5235 Rangeline Road, Service Road South, for reports of a person shot. At least two people are believed to have been shot, and their conditions are unknown. Police say they cannot confirm any arrests that have been made yet in the case. So we're watching this one as we get more information on this. Also, speaking of this violence and what we're going to do about it, joining me 1 o'clock on Friday, Mobile Police Chief Paul Prine. That's been confirmed, so the chief will be joining us. A lot to talk about with him. All right, to the phones at 343-0106. And Benson is in Mobile. Hey, Benson. Is this Benson? Do I got the? Maybe I have a. Did we press everything right here? Yeah, there we go. Benson, it's you. I loved you on your show in the 80s. Benson? Okay. I don't know. Maybe, hey, I don't know if something changed in here, but if you can check with. We've been pressing a lot of buttons this morning, so let's make sure that they're still there. All right. From the text line here. Let me kick out some of the Whoopi conversation. Whoopi's on a paid vacation. Yeah, I some questions about Whoopi Goldberg there. Dale, are the nefarious payments from Russia and Ukraine to Hunter Biden paying off yet? I don't know. What was the deal? I don't think there was, other than personal profit, I didn't think there was any kind of deal reached there. Natalie says, you have a big voice, Sean. I guess, thank you. I wish more people would do research. I'm in no way a Putin supporter growing up in country that was occupied by Warsaw Pact with the Soviets. I have no love for them, but this is all a diversion from our own problem. Yeah, but it's a serious diversion, right, Natalie? I mean, that's what frightens me. I mean, we're looking at a situation where we have a... when people brush this off, I worry because... Child of the 80s. You grew up, and I'd love to hear your story, Natalie, in a Warsaw Pact country. I saw it here on the other side of the pond that, grew up in the 80s with the thought that at any point, I mean, our movies were about that. There were miniseries about it. There were stories as we were all walking around in our acid-washed jeans, right, and skateboarding or whatever. This idea was in your head that at any point this could all go down and that it would be mad, right? Mutually assured destruction. And I still maybe I see it through a different lens than somebody who's younger than me that didn't grow up at that time. But I take this extremely seriously. I mean, extremely seriously. And by the way, that story somebody was asking where I got it's a Johns Hopkins study. The story I was reading was from Washington Times. I could pop this up on the Twitter feed as well. Hopefully you're following me there at FM Talk 106.5 on Twitter. And it's Dan and Dalton talked about it this morning as well. I just think it's interesting. I don't, and here's the thing. I'm not trying to score points because a lot of people would say, yeah, those dummies that had lockdown. I think in the first couple weeks before you figured out what was going on with this, I get it. You're trying to, I mean, you didn't know what was going on with COVID. But after a couple weeks when they had a little more idea, this beachhead that was reached by government for shutdown that stayed was doing grave damage out there to businesses. Remember my frustration with the fact that big box stores could be open, but mom and pop stores, locally owned stores, couldn't be. Remember all that? And while I was in the essential worker category, we could still come and go. A lot of folks couldn't out there. And now the stats are showing that it's a very small, and how they pull these numbers together, I don't know exactly, but very small impact, 0.2% of having lockdowns. That they said here, the lockdowns during the early phase of the pandemic in 2020 reduced COVID-19 mortality by about 0.2%. So, but we know all the problems that happened because of that, right? The unemployment, businesses going under, school issues, political unrest, domestic violence, drug abuse, all those things going on out there. So it's just now, I guess, what we all kind of saw is now coming out in a study, so we can circle back to it. Probably shouldn't say circle back. It's such a socky thing to say. All right, 1229 FM Talk 106.5. I've got news on the way. Cameron Smith's going to join us as well. And we'll keep our eyes on this story from right around Rangeline. This shooting, multiple people have been shot. We'll give you details when we can.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Once again, the story that came out from NBC 15 News that had another shooting here. This is kind of breaking news. This was, and the irony is not lost to me, law enforcement dispatched to American Family Care on Rangeline, Service Road South, for reports of a person shot. Now they're saying at least two people have been shot, condition unknown. As we get more information, I'll pass along. Remember, you can check us out on Facebook and Twitter with that as well if you're away from the radio for some darn reason. I'll give you an update there. Also, Vince says in that area, too, traffic info. Somebody just, he used the term smoked, probably hit the power pole at Hall's Mill by Walmart and Rangeline. So, Vince, thanks for the traffic update out there. And we'll, as that, if that starts affecting traffic, we'll pass it on as well. Y'all say hello to my friend Cameron Smith, AL.com, Triptych Foundation, old man, Cameron Smith. Hey.
Hey, Sean, I'm feeling like an old man today.
Yeah, sure. How old?
40 years old, four decades, man.
That's cute. Wait till you start pushing 50.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to get a lot of pairs of Hokas over the next decade for that to happen.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I'm 49 and I'm rocking those now, so I'm living like the late 30s and early 40-year-old folks out there. So, yeah, this is, you kind of have a, you know, like Jimmy Buffett made a song, you wrote a column about it.
Yeah, a columnist looks at 40. This is actually one of the pieces. One of the things that's weird about being a columnist is you get to kind of hide behind the issues, and you talk about the issues, but you don't really a lot of times talk about yourself and kind of what you've learned. And this is a piece where I try to let people know me a little bit better. And some of the things that I've realized is, you know, find your people, push to failure. When you find a purpose in life, go after it with reckless abandon. And this is a little bit of a warm, fuzzy piece, but I want people to really think about, hey, who's important to you? What's important in your life? And what are you going to do about it? And that's the whole point of the column.
I like it. You gave a number here. A quote from a British anthropologist, or maybe not a quote, but you said, humans are cognitively limited to maintaining about 150 stable relationships with people they actually know. Man, I think that's pretty high. I think that's pretty ambitious.
Yeah, we don't think about it. I mean, this was a number that shocked me, but it's actually been a pretty stable number in the field of study of anthropology. And what's happening is in social media and the digital fantasy land we live in, we look at our friends as a number, and it's high, and it's better for it to be really high. But the truth is, we don't have that many people that really just mean that much to us. And that's what I think we need to focus on is who are the people in our lives that I jokingly put, you know, would suck the snake venom out of your leg to save your life. You know, those type of friends that you're going to call your ride or dies, that's where you should be investing in your time, not to get one more digital friend on the margin.
So you think we spread the peanut butter too thin because of that, because of the, you know, social media?
Yeah, I think that we lose the quality, right? Instead of folk, and I'm guilty of this, and that's one of the things that I'm reflecting on as a columnist. Man, I really want people to read my stuff. I want them to say they like it. That's great. But at the end of the day, relationships are what give color to life. And if you don't have real ones because you're chasing digital ones, and I'm not saying it's bad to be on social media. I am saying that if those additional numbers and your thousands of friends sacrifices time with actual friends who love you and care about you and know you, then you're messing up.
All right. This is something y'all can read, of course, over at AL.com, or probably link it through from the social media feeds of my friend. You know, I'd suck the poison out of your leg, and then I'd never let you forget it, though.
No, you wouldn't. And I mean, Dana McCain, who's also a columnist at AL.com, said she didn't know if she'd go that far, but she at least put a tourniquet on my leg. So I was really appreciative for her for that.
Well, there you go. We got those. You got two backups there on this. I want to pivot here and talk about the Trisha Powell Crane story called it the ultimate Alabama lawmakers eyeing creation of the ultimate parent choice education savings legislation. So this is another school choice bill. It's been dubbed as the ultimate here. So what makes it ultimate, what Del Marsh is bringing to the Senate floor? What is this?
Well, after I get off with you, I'm about to drop a column on this very topic. And this is throwing down the gauntlet. This is saying we've nibbled around the margins. The Alabama Accountability Act created some flexibility. We've got some charter schools. You got some magnet schools, got some virtual things. This would give parents education savings accounts that are quite generous that they could use to educate their kids. It's just, this is what you get. You can take the state portion of the child's funding. It would track the child, and you would be able to use that to educate as you see fit. Understandably, the education bureaucracy's hair is on fire. They can't believe this. It would just be so costly. What I want to ask people is, do you like what you're getting from Alabama education? And the answer is, some people say, sure, in which case you're fine, stay where you are. But for a lot of the hundreds of thousands of kids, the answer is no, you're being underserved, you're not getting a good education, and you need options. And this would give them to the parents, empower the parents over the bureaucracy. I think it's a great deal, but man, it would be revolutionary for Alabama education.
Let's talk about how it would work here, and then I'll probably play devil's advocate to make this more interesting. First of all, it says here the proposed bill, which, by the way, I just got a note on Twitter that came out that it did pass the Alabama Senate Education Policy Committee, this bill. But it would – is the term portable? Is that right? It would it said the proposed bill would allow parents to access money that the state would have used to pay for their child's public education, approximately $6,300 last year, and direct it to other types of schooling, including private school and homeschool options. So that's the money allocated to your child, and you can move it to where you want. Is that my understanding okay there?
Yes, and it's even different than that. It would go into an education savings account for eligible education expenses. This isn't sort of you have a voucher that you can then hand to another school. It's you get the dollars to educate the child, and it's a lot more flexible in that regard. And the reason that it's a big deal, and people don't realize this, but education funding is comprised of state, local, and federal. The state is the biggest chunk, but then local and federal sort of add in there. And what this would do is take the state portion and say, that state portion, you can put in an education savings account. You can go to a private school. You can use it. You can stay where you are. You can use it for homeschooling, some other kind of hybrid, whatever you think is the best way to provide the education for your child.
Okay, so and I'm putting on another cap here and playing devil's advocate. People will argue that then you're going to have this flight from failing schools, and y'all, before you start typing, I'm doing this just for effect. This flight from failing schools, people are taking that $6,300 and taking their talents elsewhere, and there is going to hasten the demise of that school that's on the edge, already having trouble. You're just condemning that school.
Yes. I mean, and this is the point, the idea of you have schools that are perpetually under-delivering. And I know this is hard for a lot of communities to hear, that this school that I went to, that I like, you know, is not providing the results for students. But when you look at the comparative NAEP scores and things like that on achievement tests, Alabama hangs out in the bottom all the time. And that's with some of the really good schools in Alabama bringing up that average score. And so for some people in Alabama, those schools are just awful. And the idea that we would continue that we would say, well, the issue here is this school's failing, so we should allow it to continue and perpetuate and go on. I think the answer should be no. No, we're not. We're going to make some radical changes. And if that thing fails, we're going to have to completely redo it. And I think that's the right answer.
I mean, people argue this is you'll jump out of the frying pan and you know, maybe into the fire, or leave the frying pan there to scald. It's almost that this will dismantle the whole idea of public education, which I'm playing devil's advocate still, because I still believe it probably shouldn't be in the business of government. But go ahead.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if Alabama were producing the results that were good for its future or for children, then we wouldn't be having this conversation. If the education bureaucracy and experts were indeed good at figuring out this problem, we would not be having this conversation. In Alabama, every time, whether it's the AEA or others, it's, well, this might not go well. This major change to education, oh, it will be bad for students. We know it's bad for students in Alabama, the status quo. Really bad. And so the idea that, well, you know, there's uncertainty here. We should be honest about that. Of course there is. You know, that there's a lot of different programs around the country that have tried things. Some have gone well, some have gone poorly. And then the next response is, well, we shouldn't experiment with our kids. Well, you're dooming them to failure otherwise. So if that's what you want and that's the status quo you want to maintain, keep doing what you're doing. Otherwise, give something like education savings accounts that are really generous. Give it a shot.
Okay, whose ox is getting gored here when you do that? The people that are screaming the loudest will be whom? The union?
Well, the fear from the AEA is the AEA is there to support the existing public school teachers and the education support personnel. And the idea is any dollars that go out of those traditional public schools into other environments harm their membership. And if that's their take, that's great. But I'm not particularly concerned about the system. I'm more concerned about the kids. And so if that's their main complaint, I understand it. They have every right to make their claim, write their PAC checks, and ask Republicans to bounce this thing. But if legislators and the governor care about kids in Alabama, for heaven's sake, please try something different that's material.
Yeah, because that's one of the things that the money being spent, we're not at the top of it, but we're definitely not at the bottom of it. But the results we've gotten decade after decade are at the bottom. So if you're looking at this as the taxpayers, you know, let alone the parents, they've got a beef here, a legitimate beef.
Yeah, and there's numerous states, Tennessee, North Carolina, that spend less per pupil that get better education and results than Alabama. Alabama Education Lab, you mentioned it on the air a while ago, did a piece saying they tracked school funding and student achievement and found that there was actually an inverse correlation, that the more funding you threw at a lot of schools in Alabama, the worse the scores were. It wasn't the case that more money made better test results. It was, unless you got to the higher end schools in the wealthier communities, then more money would help them on the margin. So, and I don't think that's anybody's specific goal, is let's throw more money at public education to help the elites. But that's the thing that we've heard over and over and over again, that more, if we fully fund education, everything will be better. No, it's how you teach. It's what you teach, and creating a marketplace for education where different styles of education get to compete for dollars. It works for everything else in our life. Why wouldn't it work for public education?
You wonder, though. I mean, there's a component here, I think a big component of the parents, right? And where they how much importance they put on education. Are they realizing education, or are they just a good place for the kids to be while they're at work? And you wonder if that won't high grade. And once again, I'm a proponent of this, but the families that choose to take that $6,300 and apply it elsewhere, it will high grade the results. Because I think not just the students, but the parents that kind of choose that move are people that are engaged in their children's lives.
Yeah, and that's a variable that no policy is going to fix. That if a parent wants to avail themselves of opportunities like an education savings account, then they can and will. And giving them that option is really important. I suspect there will be a lot of parents who say, I don't really care. I mean, that's sad, but there's not a policy to address that. My point is, to give that option to parents so that they do have it, then those who do care, it matters a lot to those kids.
All right. People want to get more of what you're writing or more of your commentary. Where do they go?
At D. Cameron Smith on Twitter, al.com/opinion. Join the conversation. And like I said, I'll have a column coming out on the education savings accounts legislation that's pending.
All right. Good deal. We'll probably be talking about this more next week as well, Cameron. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Sean.
All right, there he is, Cameron Smith, and we're coming right back. More Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Welcome back, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this rainy Wednesday. Check in with my buddy David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars, and we're always talking about the inventory and fresh trades, man. You got them.
We do. We've got some really nice trade-ins we've just taken in. I got a pair of Nissan Altimas. I got three Hyundai Sonatas. Two Honda Santa Fes. Not all of these are trades, but the majority of them are. And business is picked up and everything's good. I guess the rain brings the customers to it.
That's a good thing. Let's talk about the other thing y'all are famous for, all the selection of financing. And it truly is a selection.
It is. I'd say we've got 15 lenders in-house, which rates from 1.75 up, and terms all the way out to 84 months. So we can make, you don't have to go 84 months, but we can make anything you want to have happen, happen. You can get a lot more car for 84 months than you can for 48 months.
That's for sure. How do they find you?
We're on Highway 90 at Plantation in Theodore. They can go to our website at lcmmotorcars.com or give us a call at 251-375-0068.
Thanks, David.
Thank you, buddy. Have a good day.
You too. David McCrary checking in from LCM Motor Cars. Y'all go check them out and that new inventory. All right, from the text line, this unnamed texter said, when we were talking about the money, right, the money available. Now, once again, so you understand this, this has gone through and it did clear the Alabama Senate Education Policy Committee. Okay, so it'll pass the bill, it goes to the Senate, then if the Senate passes the bill, then it's got to be reconciled with the House. So there's a couple steps. It's not done yet, but it's moving. How about that? As they talk about it in Montgomery, and it would give the parent of the child approximately $6,300 to direct it to other types of schooling, including private school and homeschool options. It would be in this, and not like a voucher, which is kind of different, but it would be in this account, and then you could use that account to pay for education up to $6,300. I think that was based on last year's expenditure per student. So that's interesting. So from the text line, unnamed texter said, "Damn, this is retroactive. Is this retroactive?" I don't think so. Unnamed texter, he said, "We homeschooled all five of our kids." Let me take a second here. God bless you. God bless you. During the short period of time when our kids were doing virtual and. The missus, my wife is a retired school teacher. That was a challenge. But they homeschooled five of our kids while we continued to pay into the failed public schools. Still wouldn't have changed a thing. So glad we did it. And the results show. But you have the patience of Job, whoever you are, unnamed texter. Tim says, when you have these kids that will not conform to learning and have no discipline in the school, cannot get support from their parents because they're nonconforming, there's nothing you can do with the child. That's what's going on now. But what if you're the other? Here's the thing. If your child doesn't fit that bill and they're in the desk next to the child, that's not, you know, there's the problem. You're not going to fix. We all say, well, we could just fix the problems at home. It can't happen. It hasn't happened. You might say, well, that's the thing you need to do, but you can't do it. So you have to get off the thing that can't happen and figure out what you can do. And in this case, you take that child and put them somewhere else. Like, once again, I was playing devil's advocate with Cameron because, I mean, just having the choir, you know, right behind the preacher the whole time is no fun. I agree. I agree with this move. We have not seen results that would be the equivalent of the money. Once again, we're not at the top of the pack for spending per student, but we're definitely not at the bottom of the pack. But the results we get are from the bottom of the pack. Now, the problem is you'll say, well, that sentence is, that child left in the school where the people are leaving to, well, they need to leave too. I mean, because I've gone through that discussion many times and I get it. Now, what happens? The interesting thing is, what will happen if this movement goes what if there's not availability? That's going to be one of the questions. In other words, you have the $6,300 bucks, and you say, I want to go to this school, and that school's full, be it a private school or another public school. That's going to be an issue because their capacities are developed around their school district. So you have let's say public school to public school. You have a super performing public school and everybody wants to go there, but they don't have the number of teachers or classrooms or all that kind of stuff. So you say, well, you build out to the, yeah, but you, it'll take you time. You can't just magically build it out in year one when a bunch of people are trying to come in. So that it will cause some hiccups out there. I think it's going to cause some discussion, and that's a good thing going forward. We will keep our eyes on this bill because that's for sure very important to a lot of folks. It's important, even if you don't have kids in school, it's important to our community. All right, speaking of our community, you know, one of the subjects we talk about a whole bunch here on the show is litter, is people, and all kinds of litter. I mean, we, you know, the person that drives me crazy, I see them throw food bag out of their car to the somebody that is coming out of the back of their truck, right? That's as you're going down the road, to somebody that's dumping illegally at the end of some cul-de-sac. Well, these are all challenges for the city. Chief Resilience Officer Casey Calloway is going to join me in a couple minutes here. We're going to talk about that, this plan they're unrolling, and how they're going to come up with but the Litter Free Mobile campaign. We'll talk about that all straight ahead, right here on Midday Mobile.